The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program Amy Bloom. She joins us on the telephone in Connecticut, and she's got a new novel out. It's called Blunt Instrument. Welcome back to the program, Amy.
It's nice to be here again.
Amy, I think your title really tells us a lot about what kind of a book to expect.
Well, I suppose so. The next one's called Honest Mistake, and so there's certainly a theme of wanting to look a little closer at the cliches.
Are you saying we have a series?
We do seem to have a series. Well, we shall see. I mean, I guess that'll be up to me and the publisher, but the plan is a series of Del Chandler mysteries, of which Blunt Instrument is the first.
Well, you certainly picked the right publisher, because Otto Penzler is the god of mysteries.
I know. Lucky me.
How did you get connected with Otto? I'm curious.
A friend of mine at another publishing house said, you know, had read a rough draft of Blunt Instrument and said, I really love this. You know, I've worked with Otto. I think you should send it to him. And he was very responsive, so that was great. And then we shook hands, and here we are.
Nice. Is this the first mystery crime novel you've written?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I feel like this is one of those learn by doing experiences, and it was. I love mysteries, and so it was a pleasure to begin to think about how are these things that are so delightful to read and so engaging to read. How did they get constructed? So I really did enjoy that part. Plotting is not usually central to what I do, although, you know, other novels certainly have plots, but, you know, there's a certain expectation on the part of the reader. I'm not much of a puzzler. I'm not really a locked room kind of girl. Mm. But I understood that there were some things that had to be delivered in a mystery, and I did my best.
Well, clearly, as we get into this, we recognize you have immersed yourself in the genre. You are really having fun with this. I found this just so much fun to read. Tell us about your protagonist.
Oh, I'm glad you found it fun. Yeah, Del Chandler is a failed English professor, sort of an assistant professor whose mother dies and goes into a tailspin and makes a terrible hash of everything until she is absolutely unemployable. And lucky for her, inherits her Uncle Louise's PI agency in New Haven, you know, for whom she had helped out after school all through high school, and he leaves it to her. She gets a gun and a gun permit and watches a lot of Law and Order and hopes for the best, starting out kind of low and slow in her criminal investigations and being reasonably successful since she's a pretty smart person. And then what kicks off this particular novel is the death of an elderly academic at Cromwell University, a fictional university I made up. And he is bludgeoned to death with a bust of Nathaniel Hawthorne, hence the original Blunt Instrument.
She's hired by the president of the college. The president just seems to kind of be covering herself for this murder. She's just kind of like trying to do the right thing and keep the trustees and everybody else happy.
She's certainly trying to do what looks like the right thing. Lots of times people's hearts are not deeply engaged in doing the right thing, but they are engaged in CYA.
And she shows up, and one of her first things that she does is she drops in on a gentleman, an older fella, who is her godfather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is,
she says, if Jewish people had godfathers, this would be my godfather. He is the oldest friend of her parents and has been involved in her life since she was a baby.
I'll say, and when she shows up at the house, that's when we immediately get a sense that we're in for a romp.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, that was the idea. You know, people behaving in unexpected ways. And, you know, I always think that the good thing, the difference between a good story and a boring story is that you have to give people room to reveal themselves. You know, good people do not just do good things. Bad people do not just do bad things. Old people are not just technologically awkward. You know, young people are not all slackers. It's useful, I think, and more interesting in this world to see people 360 degrees and not just a cartoon.
If you're just tuning in, Amy Bloom has joined us. Her new novel is Blunt Instrument. She early on gets to meet some of the faculty, and this has kind of a Agatha Christie feel to it as she meets these various personalities.
Sure. It's a little bit who is at the country house for the weekend.
Mm-hmm. And as we meet them, I don't know if you're consciously trying to throw us off by their personalities, but we have a lot of potential suspects here.
We do, and that's partially because the very first time, my roughest draft of this mystery, I was sort of floundering a little bit, and I sent it to my beloved high school English teacher, who wrote back and said, you know, honey, I love the characters and the dialogue is so funny. I don't know much about mysteries, but shouldn't there be more than one suspect? And I thought, oh, I think you're right. I think I need to work on this part of the mystery construction.
Uh-huh.
And so now I wanted to have a world of the kind of people you would meet at an academic cocktail party.
Well, obviously, the delight of a mystery is the mystery. So I'm going to be careful not to give anything away. But
good.
If you'd be kind enough to introduce us to some of our potential suspects, I think that would be fun.
Sure. I think, you know, there is the tall, handsome, irresistible Harry, who has just gotten tenure and is flying high, kind of the Icarus figure. And again, part of what's fun and interesting in a mystery is that people can be bad people. It doesn't make them murderers, you know. And so there's always that interesting process of uncovering what the truth is about this person, which may not be pretty, but also might not include murder. And the people who are less likely, but equally complicated. And so there are several retired people. There's the administrator for the department, who is one of my favorite figures, Mrs. Groth, who is sort of a combination of, I would say, the Wicked Witch of the West, and also sort of Oz the Great and Powerful, you know, who can answer questions but doesn't always choose to and is somebody to be negotiated with. And it goes in the book, it's not just academics. It's also staff. It's also the cleaning lady. It's also the president of the university. It's also the police chief downtown. And so I wanted to make it very much in the world and not just its own small alien universe within the world. I really wanted it to be part of the world because that's really the way it is. You know, this is not an ivory tower. This is, you know, a wide range of ambitious human beings who tend to be interested in ideas, but not just interested in ideas, also interested in advancement. And also for the younger people who are associates and adjuncts, you know, scurrying like hamsters from one course to another on three different campuses trying to make a living, which is not exactly how we show academia most of the time.
When Del Chandler arrives on the scene, one of the first things that she wants to find out is the police investigation. How's that going? Who's investigating? And the lead investigators seem to be stonewalling her. But she meets some other police officers who become very important characters.
Yes, she meets a good friend who is a woman who's a police detective, and she meets a love interest, the gentleman who is the police detective. And they stay with us through the novel and actually into the next one as well, because I liked both of their characters so much.
Well, from my perception, both of those police officers are potential love interests in Dell's mind.
I think the people, as you say, are complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have my brother-in-law, who's retired LAPD, vet the book just so I didn't make any terrible mistakes in police procedure.
Well, I think you did very well. And I kept laughing. And I love a mystery that has so much humor in it. And you just,
oh, I'm glad.
The way you turn a phrase, and at the very beginning, when you make that comparison with the TV show Law and Order, I was in stitches.
I'm glad. I feel like it needs, it doesn't have to be fun. And if I was a different kind of writer, maybe it wouldn't be. But for this particular book, part of the real joy of it was just kind of letting loose and cutting up.
Well, I think that stories that are dealing with academia can be almost suffocating at times. I can remember years ago, there was a writer from Minnesota named John Hassler who wrote a lot of books about colleges. I had him on the show many years ago. And some of those are just so slow and ponderous. And you don't let that happen.
I'm not much interested in the slow and ponderous. Even when I'm writing literary novels, you know, they're fairly short, and the idea is to move along briskly, you know, not to get into a 20-page digression about something that the reader doesn't care about. A friend of mine once said, research is for the writer, story is for the reader.
Mm. I agree. It's pithy, and it's succulent.
Oh, I'm glad.
The book is Blunt Instrument by Amy Bloom, and I'm curious, with all the different types of things that you've written, how you got to the point in your career where you said, I'm going to try this.
I feel strongly that I never want to write the same book over and over again. And so, you know, whether they're linked short stories, which is a form that I also like, or sometimes nonfiction, I've written a couple of children's books. I like telling a story, and it is a real joy and a real gift to me to get to tell stories in a number of different structures. I mean, I also like writing for television, you know, which is very nice because you get collaborators, and not so much when you're writing a book. But it's a great pleasure to sort of try different things, and some will be more successful than others, but it is really challenging, and for me, an opportunity to write in different forms.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, The Book Nook, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling, and we've been joined by Amy Bloom, and we have some listeners out there who are not familiar with you who perked up when you mentioned television, and they're probably wondering, who is this and what is her bio? Can you give us like a pocket bio? You've done a lot of things.
Sure. Let's see. A pocket bio. I got my training as a clinical social worker and practiced as a psychotherapist and still do the very small practice. And I began writing short stories in the early 90s, and those got some attention. They turned into collections. So I've written 3 short story collections. At some point, some people in television took notice of the short stories and said to me, oh, do you have anything that could be turned into a television show? To which I said no, because I couldn't think of anything. And eventually, I went into business with a couple of really wonderful producers and wrote a lot of pilots. As it turns out, what I didn't know about television, especially back in the day, is that people made a living writing pilots, even if they never got put on the air. Mm. And So I wrote a lot of pilots, got to work with a lot of wonderful people, got to pitch a lot of projects, some of which went forward, some of which didn't. And when I began teaching, which is I spent 10 years teaching at Yale and about 14 years teaching at Wesleyan, both in Connecticut, I taught television writing as one of my classes, you know, sort of advanced fiction, television writing, and then I would alternate with children's books, all of which was a lot of fun. I like teaching, and it was an opportunity to share some of that with people who were interested, and everybody in my television class had to produce, you know, a pitch, a pager, an outline, and a full script over the course of the semester. And I never took courses like that, but I'm sorry I didn't.
Oh, wow. Well, yesterday on the calendar was Bloom's Day. And today in the Book Nook is Amy Bloom Day. And you mentioned New Haven and Yale. And, of course, that brings to mind another Bloom. Is it true that you might have been related to Harold, or is that just a story?
No, that's something Harold made up.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was lovely. We were very good friends. And in the latter part of his life, and that was a wonderful thing. And he used to say that I reminded him of his mother, and he reminded me a bit of my dad. And we became a somewhat unlikely pair, but very much adopted cousins. And I will say that to have a cup of tea with Harold Bloom and, you know, make a passing remark and have him then say, well, yes, I think that's an echo of this, and then recite a series of sonnets from memory was, for me, a very powerful experience.
I totally understand. Dr. Bloom has been much maligned by some people. I had him on the show twice, and he did he did exactly that. He was reciting poetry, and to hear him do that is just the most intense pleasure.
I don't claim that he was perfect or always on the side of the angels, but he was definitely on the side of poetry and criticism and the power of art.
I think he would totally agree. And I enjoyed it when he would declare war on the New York Times or something. I just get a kick out of it.
Well.
Yeah. Wow. What a personality. Well, we digress. Amy, when we get to the end of the book, I'm being careful here. Mm-hmm. There's another murder near the end of the book. And this really switches things up.
Yes. I'm not sure how much more I can say either, but my goal was to let things be complicated. In general, my feeling is that it is personality that drives events. It's not just the thing that happens. It's not just that somebody gets hit by a bus. But the real story lies in what do they do after they get hit by a bus if they survive? How do people handle tragedy? How do they handle loss? How do they move forward or not move forward? And so all of my plots in everything I write, probably including the children's book, is that things that happen reveal who you are. They don't just make you who you are. And that's true in the murder mystery, too.
And how does our intrepid private detective handle her own personal mystery that is revealed, and much to her surprise?
Well, I don't think it's that uncommon to find yourself in your 30s or your early 40s discovering things about which you had known nothing before. We grow up a little bit, we see people a little more clearly, we get to wipe some of the dust off the windshield, and lo and behold, there are things about ourselves and the people around us that had not been clear. And then again, as I say, you have to decide, what am I going to do with this information? How am I to live with this? And so that is part of what she goes through as well. And as I say, I find her a sympathetic character. I also admire her doggedness and her perseverance. She is not somebody who gives up easily. And so I imagine she will make her way through her own personal forest, just as she does with the mystery.
We live in a nation of immigrants, and in these charged times with the demonization of so many immigrants, I feel a particular fondness for them. And when we get to the cleaning lady in your book, I said, oh, this is my favorite character.
Oh, I love her. I love her. I think she's a great character. And since I am the child of immigrants and grew up surrounded by nothing but immigrants, I didn't grow up thinking that that was a particular category. I thought that was a category called people.
Mm-hmm. My grandparents lived in Chicago for 50 years and never learned English.
Yeah. Well, I imagine that they felt they didn't have to.
You're exactly right. They did learn fluent Polish, however, because that's what their mm-hmm. neighbors spoke.
Right.
So
yeah, and I think, you know, I'm always going to be writing about, you know, the small essential family and the bigger family and the community, because I'm always interested in the pathways that run between those things. I always think that, you know, personality is sort of poured from this very small vessel of family, but then there is community and then there is culture, and all those things get mixed around, you know, in us like a milkshake as our personality is being formed.
My guest is Amy Bloom. We're talking about Blunt Instrument, her new mystery novel. And a few years ago, you published a book, and I was trying to get you on my show. I couldn't do it. I had you on many years ago a couple times, but for this particular mm-hmm. book, you got so much coverage in the media, and it was a bestseller.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, this is like your most personal book. It's got to be. Do you want to talk about that book at all?
Sure. I don't mind. I feel like the memoir did what I wanted it to do and what my late husband had wanted it to do, which was share information and share a story in a way that might be useful to other people.
Our listeners are probably wondering what more the book was about. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Sure. When my late husband was in his 60s, actually his early 60s, he was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. And the memoir is really about that discovery and the progression of the illness and his very clear, thought out, and firm decision that, as he said, he was a former football player, as he said, I would rather die on my feet than live on my knees. I am not going through the long goodbye of Alzheimer's. We had both seen it close up in our extended families. And he asked me to help him go to Dignitas, which is a place in Switzerland. There are now several in Switzerland, actually. Where you can, if you apply and if you are accepted and if you get through the interviews with the doctors, you can receive medical assistance in ending your life. And that's what he chose to do. And the book is about that and what that was like and how that was. It's not a very long book, but I tried to be as clear and as open about it as I could. I'm actually a pretty private person, so that was hard. But the first page of the book said, my husband told me to write about this, which was true. He, you know, and I mean, he was also a guy with a sense of humor. He said, look, if I had a broken faucet, I'd call a plumber. I have a story. I'm calling the writer.
Wow. What courage.
Yes. He was really indomitable about that, and my job was to support him and help him.
Hmm. And you mentioned you're working on another book. How's that going?
What a horrible question. it's going okay. not as fast as I would like, but, you know, it helps that I love the character and that people seem to be very responsive to her, which is really a very nice thing for a writer. And we're just moving through another series of events and unexpected deaths and her determination to help out her friends and find out what happened.
Well, I love a book in this genre where I'm really not clear on everything, where it's sort of ambiguous and I'm not positive mm-hmm. what's happened. And we have that first murder and then that second murder that I mentioned later on. And so we know pretty clearly who committed the second murder. In fact, I read a lot of this stuff. My suspect, who ended up being the killer in the second murder, I said, this has got to be a killer somewhere along the line because of this person, just the way this person seemed
to
be.
All right, no hints.
I'm being very, very bland here. But the first murder, I'm still not 100% clear who did that.
Well, if you say that's not a bad thing, then I'm glad about it. I think there's breadcrumbs that are laid, but I understand. It's also I don't have any wish to trick the reader or slip something over on them or on the last page go, aha, I'm smarter than you. I never believe my readers are smarter than me. I meet a lot of very smart readers. But a little ambiguity or the opening of another question is fine with me.
Mm. Okay. Well, I need to let you go here in a minute, but I just have a couple more thoughts and questions.
Sure.
And you mentioned Michael Connelly in the book, and I'm guessing maybe he's mm-hmm. someone you admire. Are there some other writers in this?
I like oh my gosh, so many. I mean, you know, from my childhood reading Agatha Christie and Dorothy Sayers and, but in the modern world, Michael Connelly, Tana French, for sure. I adored the series by about Blanche White. By Barbara Neely, just a wonderful series starting with Blanche on the Lam. I was very affected by those because I thought they were very smart. And they also took into account like the larger world and how people move within their community and their various overlapping cultures. Walter Mosley, you know, if you showed me a shelf of mysteries, I would probably go yes, no. I like, you know, Philip Kerr. I like, I loved Martin Cruz Smith.
Mm.
I just thought Gorky Park was really made a tremendous impression on me. So those are a few people who come to mind.
I agree with you about Gorky Park and,
And Val McDermid, who I can't leave off the list because nobody does it better than she does.
That's a great list. I haven't read Thomas French or Barbara Neely, so this is good to know.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip Kerr, I had him on the show half a dozen times, and he was the one. He was my favorite. That Bernie Gunther series, oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, loved. Absolutely loved.
Unbelievably good. Well, thank you so much for your time, Amy. It's really been a pleasure reconnecting with you.
Oh, good. Have me on next time.
Thank you.
We'll bring Del Chandler back.
Excellent.
Thanks again.
The book is Blunt Instrument by Amy Bloom, and you heard about it on the Book Nook. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.